You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
If any one designer can be credited with revolutionizing women's fashion, it would have to be Paul Poiret. He made the brassiere popular and the tight skirt. He was the first fashion designer to create his own line of perfumes, and all before the First World War. A new exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute is a celebration of his genius, and joining me now is Andrew Bolton, the curator of the show, Poiret, King of Fashion, which opens today and runs through August 5th. And I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Bolton to the show. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Are the things I listed in my introduction the main reasons Paul Poiret is considered so important to the history of fashion?
Yeah, absolutely. In the annals of fashion history, he's known for liberating women from corsets, but also hobbling their legs in tight skirts. But one of the things that we were hoping to achieve with the exhibition was to focus on his modernity and the fact that he ushered in fashion's modern forms. He shifted the emphasis away from tailoring, which was the couture practice in the 19th century, to draping on the body and conceiving of dress in the round. And that was something that we wanted to highlight, was his modernity.
And also, he was the first designer to start thinking about the general public rather than just designing for the select few incredibly wealthy.
Absolutely. I think what's remarkable about him is that he almost established the blueprint for the modern fashion industry. So he was the first to create perfumes, the first to expand into interior decoration. So in a way, he established the concept of a modern concept of a designer as a far-reaching arbiter of taste.
At the same time, he was opposed to using mass production techniques.
I think that's where he fell down after the war, is that he constructs himself much more as an artist and a dressmaker. So after the war, when modernism became much more about an industrial aesthetic, it was an anathema to Poiret. He liked the idea of Orientalism and the fact that everything had to be visible and all the details had to be visible, and he hated being copied, unlike Chanel, who loved being copied and could see where fashion was going, which was much more about commercialization. Poiret just stood against that.
Well, there's a famous exchange between Chanel and Poiret, and you get a feeling that it really involves the changing of the guard.
Absolutely. The famous exchange is when, and it may be apocryphal, but Chanel bumped into Poiret on the street, and Poiret, and Chanel's wearing her famous little black dress, all clad in black, and Poiret said, "For whom, madame, do you mourn?" And she responded, "For you, monsieur." And it was such a poignant exchange, because by that stage, Poiret was no longer in the vanguard of fashion.
Wasn't the King of Fashion, the title of the show, really something he gave to himself? That was the title of his autobiography. Or were other people calling him that at the time?
No, absolutely. It's the title of his autobiography, but it was a title that was bestowed upon him when he came to America in about 1913. And because he was this great arbiter of taste, he was being hailed in the American press as a King of Fashion.
So did he use the title ironically, or did he really believe press?
I didn't think there's much irony in Poiret. Unfortunately, I think he did believe his own press.
Now, he starts off, oddly, working for an umbrella maker. That isn't where you usually expect great designers to start in the world of fashion.
No, and I think that's what's so remarkable about him, is that he didn't train. He had no formal training in dressmaking. He started off, as you say, as an umbrella manufacturer, maker, and he began to sketch fashions and present them. At that time, you could still shop around your drawings to various couturiers, and he showed them to a couturier known as Madeleine Cherie, who was a well-known couturier at the time, and she bought 12 of his designs. And after that, he started working at Doucet, who was a very well-known couturier in the late 19th century. But he had no formal training in dressmaking at that stage.
And then he worked for the House of Worth, which was probably the most famous house at the time.
Absolutely, and the most established, and in a way the most conservative. And that's what's so remarkable, is that, you know, he was working for two of the most established couture houses, Doucet and Worth, and then he reacted against those conventions to create a different form of dressmaking.
His father was in the fabric business. Do you think that played a role in the way he started seeing things? Because fabric is a key to understanding.
Oh, absolutely. And I think also, I agree completely, and also his collaborations with artists. I think at the time, you know, he liked the idea of being, you know, he wasn't a trained dressmaker, and the idea of draping fabric onto the body, which was almost like you see a modernist brushstroke on a painting. He liked the idea of spontaneity, and draping fabric directly on the body had this directness of an approach very similar to modernists at that period.
This is at the time when we're just starting to see women come out of corsets and all the bustles and all the things we associate with fin de siècle France.
Absolutely, and that was also shocking, I think, about it, was that women had been in corsets pretty much since the Renaissance, and the fact that Poirot was advocating an uncorseted, unfettered body, very much epitomized by his wife Denise, was revolutionary at the time.
How much of a role did she play in the development of his style?
I think she was critical, and one of the points we tried to make in the exhibition was to really foreground Denise's role in Poirot's creative process. Poirot, in his autobiography, talks about how he almost Pygmalion-like transformed her from a provincial girl into a fashionable woman, but she already had it in her to be this remarkable queen of fashion and a great stylist. She embraced this idea of not wearing a corset, and you see films of her in the early 20th century, and she's dancing and she's walking around completely free. In a way, she anticipated the garçon silhouette of the 1920s.
But this is also a time when show business is changing, and he starts designing clothes for dancers and actresses, and I suspect that he was responding to a new need.
Absolutely. I think Doucet and Worth had dressed actresses in the past. I mean, they were very much used as a tool, as a promotional tool to showcase a couturier's designs, but not to the extent that Poirot was embracing it. And also who he embraced. He embraced people like Isadora Duncan and Peggy Guggenheim. So bohemian, artistic women very much frequented Poirot's atelier.
My guest is Andrew Bolton, the curator of a show that opens today at the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute called Poirot, King of Fashion. It runs through August 5th. So let's talk about the classic Poirot dress. What were his fabrics of choice?
He liked very orientalized fabrics like silk damask. And he liked fabrics which were silks and satins and velvets. Fabrics which are very much associated with the couture, and fabrics which allow themselves to be draped beautifully on the body. So they had a very tactile quality that allowed this lovely way of draping on the body. They were his favorites.
And he also liked to put a lot of beads and other things
on.
Yeah,
and I think, again, that was something which he was very much influenced by Diaghilev's Ballet Russe and his designer Bakst at the time, although he claims in his autobiography that he wasn't influenced by them. They had a clear influence on him, and he loved decoration. And I think that's, again, after the war, it was problematic for him when modernism rejected the decoration. He continued to promote decoration in his work.
Well, Orientalism is something that had been part of the French sensibility for a while, Delacroix, and it continued into the early 20th century. Matisse loved to paint those odalisques, and Gide would write about going to North Africa. So was this a reflection of the interests of the time, or was he just doing something that appealed to him?
I think it's a great question, because I think it does get to the heart of Poirot. In his autobiography, the first sentence he says is, "I'm a Parisian born at the heart of Paris." And I think that's fundamental to his thinking, is that absolutely Orientalism had a great burst of energy in about 1910 with Scheherazade and the Ballet Russe. But as you say, it was very much integral to the French cultural politics since the 18th century, as was Classicism. And when you think about Poirot's work, there's two narrative threads that run through his work, which is Orientalism and Classicism. And I do think very much it was an indication of his patriotic tendencies.
Well, let's talk about the abolishing the corset, so to speak. Did he replace corsets because they were so uncomfortable? Because he often talked about being at the service of women. That was foremost in his mind.
Yeah, and I think he liked the idea of promoting the naturalism of classical dress, like Isadora Duncan. So he liked those sorts of ideas. So I think by liberating the body, it allowed for these radical changes in dressmaking, which allowed this unfettered body to wear clothing associated with the naturalism of classical dress.
But not totally unfettered. He promoted the brassiere.
That's right. Well,
he probably would have been stunned in the 60s when women stopped wearing brassieres.
Well, what was interesting about that is that that he replaced the corset with an interior grosgrain ribbon. And the grosgrain ribbon was really designed to support the breasts. And many dress historians think that was a precursor to the bra. But it was really a way of promoting his Empire line, his directoire silhouette, which was support the breasts.
Was he also the first serious designer to put women in pants?
He was. He promoted beyond the suffragettes and other sort of women's rights activists. He was a designer who was promoting dupe culottes, but not for the street, very much for the private precincts of the house or a party. He didn't really advocate trousers for the street.
Well, others had done that. Georges used to wear pants.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then he started thinking beyond women's clothing. How did he come to design, to create a perfume line? He was the first of the designers to do that, wasn't he?
He was, and I think he had such a marvelous vision, Poiret. And as I said, he saw himself more of an artist, and he loved the idea of expressing himself as an artist in different sorts of mediums, and very much influenced by the Wiener Wurzdater in Vienna, and this idea of a total work of art. And he embraced that idea of a total way of living. So he was certainly the first one as a designer to embrace perfumes and interior decoration as a way of promoting lifestyle marketing.
He was kind of interested in lifestyle in every way. He also came up with the 1,002nd night party. And that became a huge sensation.
Absolutely. And again, that was something which was, I think, a direct response to Diaghilev's Scheherazade, which premiered in Paris in 1910, and this idea of this Orientalist fete. And what was interesting is that he forced everyone to wear Persian dress. So even people who didn't come dressed as Persian costumes, he'd have Persian costumes at hand, forcing people to accept his latest innovations.
You said earlier that with changes in technology, mass production techniques, he kind of went out of fashion. Well, he lived till 1944. So what happened in all those years after World War One?
After World War One, he served as an officer in the army during the war and actually learned to sew when he was in the army. He couldn't sew prior to that, or so he claims in his autobiography. And after the war, he again returned to Orientalism as a narrative thread in his work. And whereas most people were, like Chanel and Patou, were rejecting both narrative and decorative strategies and embracing this sort of much more pared-down aesthetic as a response to the changing roles of women in society. But he clung on to this idea of a vision of femininity, which his wife adhered to, which was really about femininity and not about the garçon or androgyny or masculinization. And as a result, he was out of step from what women really wanted during the 20s. And his house, finally, he finally closed his house in 1929, although he lost his name earlier. So as well as being the first designer to create perfumes and to expand into interior decoration, he was the first designer to lose his name, unfortunately. But his house closed in 1929, and for a few years he produced works for Liberty and Printemps in Paris and continued to paint. He was always a painter, so he continued to paint, and then finally died in 1944, really of poverty. He died in poverty.
Is this the first major exhibit of his work?
It's the last show in America was 30 years ago, but it's the first show really to focus on his designs in relationship to modernism and to focus on his modernity, and also the first one to look at the impact of Denise on his designs.
And along with his work, we see other people's work, and there were also two video animation installations.
That's right, and I think that it's always quite hard to talk about a designer's how radical they were in changing fashion just by talking about it. So we've got two video animations which show how reductive his approach was to dressmaking. There's one, for example, which is literally it's an opera coat made from one length of fabric with one side seam, and it's very counterintuitive to know how just one seam would produce this remarkable garment. So we have a video as a didactic tool to explain the coat.
And then the other work is to put his achievements in context.
That's right. We've worked with an incredible scenographer called Jean-Jules de Châtillon, who's created backdrops very much reflective of the pochoirs or fashion illustrations from the period to give an atmosphere and also context to his designs.
So since his work kind of went out of fashion after World War One, how is he relevant today?
I think that in a way he was a fundamental modernist in the fact that he created garments that could hang from the shoulders. So really got the modern forms we see today really are associated with Poiret. And I think that's his legacy is really the fashion's first modernist.
The show Poiret, King of Fashion, opens today and runs through April 5th. My great thanks to Andrew Bolton, the show's curator, for being with us today.
Thank you very much.